Hi, friends. With Father's Day weekend coming up this week, I wanted to focus this week's episode on dads. Dads who have lost a baby and dads who are still in the waiting. Joining us this week is my husband, David Blair. In this episode, David shares what his grieving process was like over our 7-year journey of infertility and recurrent pregnancy loss, and we discuss the ways that his grief differed from mine and how that impacted our marriage. He also shares how we grew to support and provide space for each other over the years, what we wish we could go back and tell ourselves in the very beginning, and how other loved ones can support a grieving dad. David shares candidly and vulnerably and offers an honest perspective and insight on the ways our partners often experience and grieve in infertility and loss. I hope this episode sparks courage and ignites hope for you in the week ahead. Let's dive in. Welcome to the Catalyst for Courage podcast. Each week, we'll be sharing practical tips, inspiring stories, and a whole lot of courage and hope for those of us in the trenches of infertility and pregnancy loss. I'm your host, Lindsay Blair. I'm a certified bereavement doula, trauma specialist, and fertility coach with a passion to support others with stories like mine. Together, we can make the shift from barely surviving to truly thriving, even in the midst of infertility and loss. You are not alone, friend. Let's dive in and ignite hope together. Hey, David.
Hey, babe.
Welcome to the Catalyst for Courage podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's fun being on this side of the mic.
I know. For those of you listening, David is my husband and my podcast sound engineer. David is the mastermind behind the sound balancing. It has been by popular request that you join us here on the podcast. Yes. Anytime I ask who should be a guest on the show, unanimously, I feel like the answer is you.
Well, I am flattered. I hope I can be of some help to somebody, or at least, you know, give a little bit different perspective that maybe you don't hear a lot.
Yeah, I think it's good. And the reason that I really wanted you to be here is twofold. A, you're my husband, and I think that you are wise and you do have a lot of valuable perspective. But also, I think the partner side and the males who are experiencing infertility and pregnancy loss, that perspective just isn't talked about nearly enough. And so I'm really excited to chat about that a little bit more and you to get the opportunity to share more with our listeners about what that experience has been like for you. But before we really dive in, I would love for you to just share with our listeners a little bit more about you.
Yeah, my name's David Blair. We've been married almost 9 years now, which is crazy.
It's pretty wild.
Mm-hmm. And I was born in Las Vegas, fun fact, and have lived pretty much my whole life in the Southeast now until I moved to Clemson and did engineering there where I met you. We became great friends and got married a couple years later. I, you know, love spending time with you and our kids and going to the lake and the beach and pretty much anything outside. I like building things and all of that.
You also are kind of a Star Wars nerd.
That is true.
And Harry Potter nerd.
Well, that was thanks to you. You really turned me on to Harry Potter later in life. So
that's true. I will take credit for that.
Yeah, you can take credit for that.
One thing that's a little unique about our story is we did meet in college and we got married pretty young before we actually even graduated college. And just a few months after we got married, we experienced our first miscarriage at about 6 months into marriage. I know I shared about this a little bit in the podcast in episode 1, but even though two people can go through the same experience, we can all each process it differently. I would love if you could just share a little bit about what that was like for you.
Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. It was pretty crazy being so young and new to marriage. And then all of a sudden, this massive tragedy is in our life. And I guess confused is probably a lot of what I felt at first. Honestly, I didn't really know what to think or feel. The idea of us having an actual baby and me being a father was already mind-blowing. And then one day, the reality that actually we're not going to have that child. It just floored me, really. And I never really thought that miscarriage was really a possibility in our life. I think it's like a lot of things where you hear about terrible things that happen and you go, oh, that's someone else. But when that was our reality, it seemed almost like a bad dream. I'm sure there's something about stages of grief there, of denial or whatever, but I tried to move through it as best I could. I tried to be honestly overly optimistic and pretend like, you know, as sad as it was, the next one will be fine. We'll be okay. There's no reason to be worried about our future together.
Our doctor even told us that. I feel like that was probably an easy thing to fall into and to believe, because we were told that
for sure.
This happens. This is a fluke. Your next pregnancy will be fine. So I think it's totally expected and reasonable that you felt that way.
Absolutely. And also, I just didn't know how to support you through that as well. I mean, I was trying to process my side of things the best I could at, you know, a young age, and I had no idea how to support you best during that whole process of grief.
We got married and experienced our first pregnancy and experienced our first miscarriage before we even graduated college.
Absolutely. And I just felt helpless throughout the whole thing. And I just wanted so bad to relieve the pain that you were feeling, both physically and emotionally, but I didn't know how. And I was so, I guess, numb to myself that I didn't know how to address anything that was going on in my life either during that time. Maybe it's a cultural thing in the South, but it's all about, you know, the husband is the protector and provider and all of that kind of stuff. And here I was just now a husband, and this horrific thing happens to you, and I couldn't do anything about it. And I just felt helpless and weak and scared.
And I think looking back, I can see that. But at the time, the thought of you feeling scared or helpless was not something that I could even fathom. That would not have been even in the top 20 of the list of emotions that I would have used to describe what you were feeling at that time.
Yeah, that's funny, because that was absolutely what I was feeling. Maybe it's just me putting on a persona at the time in my immaturity, but that definitely wasn't what was going on the inside.
I remember when I suspected that we were losing our baby, driving home from work, getting home to our apartment, and I was in so much pain that I just got into the bathtub. I didn't know what to do. And I remember you sitting there and reading Harry Potter to me and just supporting me through it. What was that like for you?
Like I said, I've just felt helpless. I couldn't think of anything to do to relieve the pain that you're feeling physically. It's like, do I get Advil and Tylenol? Is that enough? Well, no. Can I distract you in some way? No. Really, I just wanted to do anything I could to try to help in a situation that really can't be helped. And it just felt overwhelming and futile and just disbelief of, is this really happening to us? Is this real life?
It felt like a bad dream. It definitely felt that way for me too. And I'm curious, just from your perspective, since that very first loss, we obviously went on to experience 8 additional losses, including 2 that resulted in emergency surgery and 1 that was a triplet we lost in our 9th pregnancy, which was our pregnancy that ultimately gave us our 2 IVF miracles, Ellie and Shepherd. But I would love if you could share a little bit more about maybe some ways that your grief evolved over the years. If it got easier to process as time went on, if it got harder, can you walk us through that journey?
Sure. I don't think it got easier or harder, honestly. It was just different at each stage. And I think I got better at navigating the grief. And by better, I mean not really spiraling into, you know, deep despair, but also not brushing the feelings under the rug and trying to pretend that everything's okay and pretending that reading Harry Potter or going on a vacation or watching a movie is going to truly help. All of those things are fine and they're helpful in the moment to try to distract a little bit. But up until that point of my life, that's how I tended to deal with most hard things, was just kind of wait it out, try to numb a little bit until a day feels better. I think over time, that really fell apart. After multiple losses, all of the sadness and anger and shame, just so many emotions inside of you can't be fixed by distraction. And that took me a while to realize. When I realized how to better navigate the emotions that I had and how to better support you in it and partner together, even in the painful stuff, not just in, you know, some logistics of our marriage and our life together, I think that that meant that I was able to move through grief each time, not necessarily faster, but more healthily. I was able to move through that grief kind of like riding a wave. I don't know how big or small it's going to be, or if there's going to be a bunch of ripples afterwards, but I'm just going to embrace this, embrace what I'm feeling, embrace what you're feeling, and try to help in any way I can, but to not neglect how I was feeling in the moment either.
I would for sure agree with that. And I think both of us, at different points in our journey, especially in the beginning, we were in full-blown avoidance mode. We just wanted to avoid feeling pain in any way that we could. And I think we both, maybe not at the same time, but we both reached a point where we realized that that was no longer serving us. It wasn't sustainable. It wasn't healthy.
For sure.
Do you remember when that shift happened for you?
I think it was probably around maybe the fifth loss. That was an ectopic pregnancy. And just literally in a metaphorical gut punch in a lot of ways to be so far down that road. We had already seen our fertility doctor for several years at that point. We had tried so many medications. We had tried so many different ways of going about this to see if we could find a real problem that we could put our finger on. And for it to come back with great HCG levels and all of that hope building up, and then finding out that our child was outside of your uterus and there was nothing that they could do. On top of that, it was life-threatening to you. I think that was beyond what I could ever hope to try to brush under the rug. That was just too much. That's when it really broke down, and I knew that I had to find a different way of navigating this.
I think that's such a great point, and thank you for walking us through that a little bit. I'm sure that you are not the only one who has been there, who has maybe tried to bury their feelings, avoid their feelings for even most of their life, especially men. Not to pick on men, but I feel like that's kind of a cultural thing.
Absolutely. And especially when your partner is going through so much pain, sometimes there's that cultural pressure of you have to be strong for her. And being strong for her sometimes gets twisted into, well, I can't be weak, and vulnerability and me struggling is weak. So I'm therefore not allowed to struggle. I'm not allowed to be vulnerable because she needs me to be strong. And it can definitely keep men especially, but I'm sure anyone, from being able to fully feel and navigate through these really tough emotions.
Absolutely. And again, not trying to pick on men, because I think women definitely struggle with this too. I have always been a feelings avoider. It just presented in a different way. One thing I also think is really not talked about enough in our culture is the secondary losses. I feel like most of the time when people think about infertility or pregnancy loss, they think of just the one primary loss, the loss of a baby, or the loss of a chance of having a baby, or the loss of things working out the way that you hoped they would. But there are really so many other secondary losses that we experience that are often not even acknowledged by others, and sometimes not even by ourselves. What secondary losses did you experience as a part of our journey with infertility and recurrent pregnancy loss?
I think with us being so young and newly married, that newlywed experience that people talk about, that just wasn't our story. You know, like I mentioned, I hadn't even graduated college yet at that time that we were married, and I already had a kid that had died. And that was just too much too soon. I think also about just kind of our life at the time, where we would try to go out on dates or meet with friends or go do something that's supposed to be fun only for triggers to happen, the grief to come up unexpectedly, and really felt like it stole some really great opportunities from us. And even when we went on vacation, you know, you could be at a beautiful beach and then the memories, the realization, the grief would just show up at the beach. And that definitely felt like a loss.
Yeah, because we would be on vacation and it was great that we could go on vacations, but every year we were kind of hoping that this would be our last vacation for a while.
Mm-hmm.
That the next year we would be elbows deep in diapers or breastfeeding or taking care of a baby. And year after year, it just wasn't the case.
Yeah, that was such a strange way of feeling that pain of being frustrated and sad that we were able to still go on vacation. And I think other losses, like financially, just when other people were able to pay down on their student loans in some ways, we were putting money towards medication and treatments and emergency surgeries after the ectopic pregnancy.
Even miscarriage. I remember after our first miscarriage, just a slew of hospital bills because we went to the emergency room twice mm-hmm. in one weekend. And it just felt like a slap in the face to see a four-figure bill come in the mail for a baby that we'll never get to meet here on earth.
Absolutely. And I think also with our church community at the time, there was a loss there because when we really opened up about what we were feeling and some of the realities of some of our experiences, we could just tell that it was pretty overwhelming to some other people in our group. And that started to make us feel like we weren't able to bring our full selves, full of grief, full of pain. And I know that's not everybody's experience, but, you know, at the time, that's where we were. And that really started to create some barriers to some of those relationships going forward.
Because I guess we were mostly in a group with other newlywed, recent college graduates. And we for sure didn't know anyone who had experienced recurrent pregnancy loss or was going through IVF. For me, that was a secondary loss. When I had thought about IVF, I knew obviously that it existed. I thought it was for people who were 40, 45 years old, wanting to have a baby. I had no idea that a 23-year-old would ever need IVF to grow their family.
And then also I'd say the loss of just never being purely excited for a positive pregnancy test again. From that first one going forward, anytime you had a positive pregnancy test, it was a, yay, we're glad that we get another chance, but what's going to happen in a few weeks or in a couple months?
It was almost a relief sometimes when I wasn't pregnant when we were trying because we could at least take a breath and we didn't have the feelings of anxiety that comes with being pregnant after loss. And I feel like even though I was the one who was physically pregnant after loss, you were very much affected by that as well.
Absolutely.
I think another secondary loss that we haven't talked about, and honestly, we could probably spend a whole nother episode on this, so maybe we will, but just the loss of intimacy in our marriage.
Yeah.
Because infertility and pregnancy loss is such a physical thing, and it's so intimately tied to sex, quite frankly. And that was a huge struggle for us.
Absolutely. Never knowing when the triggers would hit, that something as simple and as in normal context as beautiful as sex is now really complicated and very closely tied to one of the deepest points of grief in our life. Like you said, you'd see a negative pregnancy test. It was almost like a relief.
And for me, our eighth pregnancy loss was a very pivotal moment. That was our second ectopic pregnancy. It was when I lost my second fallopian tube. And you weren't able to be with me really up until right before I was taken into the OR. I had gone to the appointment myself to get my blood drawn. We did an ultrasound. I saw our baby with their heart beating just moments before being wheeled back for surgery. I would love it if you could share a little bit more with our listeners about what that day and that moment was like for you when I was in surgery, or even what the process of healing after that loss was like.
Yeah, I'd say that day, sitting in the waiting room just for hours, I just felt utterly helpless. I'd felt that at each of the losses, but this one was just so incredibly discouraging after such good HCG levels, such good signs. And once again, we have another ectopic pregnancy. And knowing what it means for the future possibility of your natural fertility, all of the risks that that posed to you and your health and your life with internal bleeding through that whole situation, I was in this really confused state of being so grateful that you were alive and that we had the ability to even know that a baby in this day and age is ectopic, to be able to save your life, and also grieving the fact that any moment as I'm waiting in the hospital waiting room, our baby is getting removed from you. And that gratitude for your life and the pain of losing their life together was just beyond what I felt like I could handle. And healing from that, I'd say it was really slow. I very much had to deal with, you know, hating the fact that I couldn't fix this situation, hating that I couldn't be strong for you in any way for this. This was totally outside of my control. I really felt that my work didn't matter at that point. Even the simple things in my life felt like they just didn't really matter anymore. And some of the despair of losing your natural fertility and knowing that our next steps are going to be more complicated because of this.
It wasn't going to happen spontaneously after that moment.
Yeah. And I just felt that our life had grinded to a halt in a lot of ways. And then I'd say also, I had to navigate a lot spiritually. It was really dark. I felt very alone and just angry. But as I really allowed myself to fully feel all of those things, honestly, it was probably several months. Healing started to really start to come. I started journaling, and I remember you actually posted a journal on your blog that I wrote at the time, just kind of processing that raw grief. And that was really helpful for me to be able to put words and thoughts together to express what I was feeling internally and get it out on a piece of paper to make it feel less overwhelming.
I think that's a really good point. I love that you brought up the journaling. Sometimes we're hesitant to speak out loud or write down what it is that we're feeling, but it really is very, very healing to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I will link your blog post in the show notes. It's real, it's raw, it's beautiful, it's pain-filled, but it's absolutely how we heal. Whether or not a couple has lost a baby, there is real grief and real loss there. What would you say about ways you noticed my grief was different from yours, or ways that my grief was similar to yours?
I think I realized that just because we shared an experience, it didn't mean that we had the same experience. We both lost a child, and over the years, many children. But just because that happened to both of us didn't mean that my experience was the same. Yours was physical and emotional and spiritual and all of that. And while I didn't necessarily share in that physical pain and the physical trauma of those experiences, I realized that what I was feeling still mattered. I think I noticed, especially earlier on, I would try to minimize the pain and move on as fast as possible. I tried to even move on faster than you had stopped bleeding at the end of a miscarriage. And that's ridiculous to say looking back now, but that was the only way I knew how to handle pain at the time, was just to try to move through it, try to fix it as much as possible in things that I can't control, bottle it up, push it aside, and move forward. maybe that was more possible for me, but that was impossible for you. I think that was a big realization for me, how I needed to give you space to experience your grief in your way and not put this pressure for you to handle things in the same timeline that I was wanting to handle things with. You really wanted to process things externally. So you would want to talk about our loss. You would want to talk about the hopelessness and the not knowing what the next steps are. And I, meanwhile, wanted to just bury it. And that was, I think, equally frustrating to both of us, because what I felt like I wanted to do was in direct opposition of what you felt like you wanted to do to deal with grief. Mm. And when those differences come together in such a painful situation, it really is a recipe for a lot of hardship.
That's so true. And I would for sure agree with that. I needed to vent and be mad about it, be angry. And meanwhile, you were wanting to avoid and numb out and not process. And that would make me feel even more angry, because it felt like my anger was being stifled or it wasn't validated. And so I feel like we had these wars where the more that I would express myself and how I was feeling, the more you would try to bury it and numb out. And the more you tried to do that, the madder it would make me. So we were just totally at odds with what we each needed.
Definitely. And I remember talking about perceived neglect and perceived threat being the root of the vast majority of relationship problems. And when you think about it from that lens, you being mad and wanting to externalize everything and bring all of the pain to the forefront was perceived as a threat to my ability to numb out.
And your numbing out was a perceived neglect to my need to process.
Absolutely. So it really was a perfect storm that created this negative cycle. And I think it wasn't until we had better language around that kind of stuff and being able to see the other person for how they are different from us, not even just their personality and the way they see the world, but also the way we grieve differently. I don't think it was until we got more awareness of that that we started to be able to change.
Yeah, I think for me, it was noticing that we would have the same fight over and over again, but about different things. Mm-hmm. And so this dynamic wasn't just a dynamic that was present when we were talking about our journey with infertility or our experience with pregnancy loss. It would be the same thing if I was frustrated by something that happened at work. I would want to process, and I think your default was to avoid and to numb out. But it really did impact every area of our life.
Definitely.
If I was frustrated by something in the house not working, you would not want to process that. You would fix it, but
I didn't really want to talk about it.
You didn't want to talk about it, and you didn't really want to engage with how it made me feel when the garbage disposal wasn't working or something like that.
And if anyone is familiar with the Enneagram and you're shouting to yourself, he's an Enneagram 9, you're absolutely right. That absolutely is what was going on there. And honestly, the Enneagram was a great tool of self-awareness, of kind of showing me how I differed in the way that I process things versus you, who's Enneagram 3, did. Really getting language around that and being more aware of how each other sees the world was so, so helpful.
You're right. That was incredibly helpful. And I use the Enneagram a lot with my clients because I think it's such an impactful tool, not only in relationships, intimate relationships, but also with family dynamics, at work, in a professional setting. It really is super helpful. It's so helpful too to know your partner's type and your type, because as you mentioned, you're an Enneagram 9, which you crave peace. I'm an Enneagram 3. I crave success and achievement. And so my Enneagram type was presenting in, I need to achieve pregnancy and carrying to term and solving this problem, figuring out why we continue to miscarry, finding the next step, making a plan and taking action. And sometimes that felt threatening to you because you just wanted peace. And you knew that if we were pregnant again, or if we had to crunch the numbers and figure financial things out or make a plan for our next steps, that didn't bring you peace. And you just desperately wanted peace.
Definitely. And I think especially when you're in such a hard time in life, you get kind of almost in survival mode where you're just looking for your basic needs. And whatever comes to the forefront, you just want that desperately, even though it doesn't solve anything in the long run.
Yeah, we trade avoiding temporary pain for a lot longer term pain, but in a different form.
Absolutely.
Did you have any fears or worries towards me in the way that I was handling the grief of infertility and recurrent pregnancy loss?
Yeah, I mean, each person is different. And once you know more about how your partner grieves, some of those fears can be, you know, at least put to rest in some way. Like, you know, for example, you processing out loud and just, you know, talking about how much everything was hurting and, you know, really wrestling with that despair in like a very overt way. If I ever got to that point in my life at that time, if I was externalizing in that way, I would have freaked myself out. And sometimes I'd project that, oh, you're in that place that I would be if I were saying those things right now. And it was just so helpful when I realized that the way you processed was different than me. And that in of itself took away a lot of that kind of fear of differences in what that looks like. The further on into our journey we got, I really realized that things like depression and anxiety disorders and all of that was really starting to become reality. And as I became more aware of that, I would kind of get scared that we weren't going to be okay at the end of the day, that something is happening here that's going to be irreparable. At any moment, we may never be able to come back from this. And that was scary.
That is scary. And I just want to take a moment to acknowledge that's a reality for a lot of couples. And I think that we came to see that. I think the statistics are something like 80% of couples that lose a child get divorced. And that's a really sobering reality. And so if you are someone who is listening and your relationship has been damaged to a point where you feel like it's irreparable, just know that you are seen and your pain is valid. This journey is incredibly hard because these are experiences, infertility and pregnancy loss, these are experiences that can drive you apart or they can bring you together, truly. There's a real tension there because, as David mentioned, two people can go through the same experience, but we experience it differently. And so there takes a walking that tightrope of what you need and tending to your own healing while also acknowledging what your partner needs and tending to the healing that needs to take place within your relationship. Because things will never be the same once you go through an experience like this. You have to kind of redefine
definitely
your relationship together. It's wild to me that we will be celebrating 9 years of marriage this October, and to think that the vast majority of our marriage so far, still 7 out of 9 of those years, we were not only navigating newlywed life and learning how to be married and how to be partners, but we were navigating that grief that comes with recurrent pregnancy loss and infertility. What would you say our grief looks like today, nearly a decade in, as it compares to what you mentioned earlier of how it looked in those early years?
I'd say it's a lot more of intentionally giving each other the space that's needed to process, of not putting those expectations on each other to be the same as us, and being okay that our timelines are going to be different at each stage. I think we've definitely gotten better at avoiding some of the pitfalls of that neglect and perceived threat kind of cycles that we were talking about. And as we've learned more about each other, I think our communication has improved a lot, not only just about what we're feeling internally, but being able to really be there for each other in a more meaningful way. And then sometimes it's doing something together to honor and validate the losses that we have and the experiences that we've been through, like our tattoos that we got together a couple weeks ago. So, I mean, for us, I'm really happy with how much we've grown. And I know that's not always the story for every relationship. And I'm just really grateful that you've continued to invest and fight for our marriage as I have also. And I'm really happy for how far we've come.
Me too. I would definitely agree. What wisdom or advice would you give a couple who's just beginning their journey of infertility or has very recently experienced the loss of a baby? What would you say to them about how to practically navigate those challenges?
Yeah, I'd say just learn more about grief, like a lot of what we're talking about today. Learn about how you grieve, how they grieve. And this is probably a new experience for you both. You may have had other losses individually before coming together. You may have had other tragedies in your life of different kinds, but going through the same loss and traumatic event together is going to be a new experience for you regardless. And I think keeping an open hand and being gracious as much as possible to each other is going to go a really long way in making sure that the relationship stays healthy. Your marriage gets better or bitter. And I think if you continually push to be more vulnerable and that you're the kind of person that your partner can be vulnerable with, and I think also just embracing the reality of what you're going through, that things will never be the same after this loss, that things have changed and there's grief even just for the change, like we were talking about with the secondary losses. But it's okay, and you will have joyful moments in the future, and there will be days that you do have hope. But there are going to be days that are pretty close to despair and that are really sad and that y'all are struggling and not seeing things the same way. But no matter what, if you both keep showing up day after day, year after year, you're going to get through this. It's like rowing in a boat together. You're trying to go the same direction. You're a partnership. And you are both going to change through this process. And the person that you will be later on is not the person that you are today. And same for your spouse. And as you both change and grow, learning to just fall back in love with each other at each stage is really key.
I think that's really good. I had a coach in high school, and he would start every single class the exact same way. He would say, one of two things is going to happen today. You're going to get better, or you're going to get worse. You never stay the same. And I think that's true for sports, but it's also true for relationships.
Absolutely.
We have a choice every single day to sacrifice for the other person, to work on ourselves. And we're never going to stay the same. It's like we're always in a river that's flowing slightly downstream. So if we're still, if we're not swimming, we're inevitably going down the stream.
Mm-hmm.
We have to swim a little bit to even stay where we are. And if we want to get upstream, we have to swim a lot harder.
Definitely. Nobody had a great relationship because they coasted.
We mentioned this a little bit earlier, that we've both been to counseling, both separately and together. I would love to hear from you to share with everyone listening what that counseling journey looked like.
Yeah, for me, I think it was individual at first. You know, as I was kind of realizing that the tools that I had in my toolbox of how to navigate life were not working anymore, I reached out to my health insurance through my employer and found out there was actually a temporary benefit that could help with therapy costs. And that was really helpful to kind of begin that process. During that time, like I mentioned, I felt like I had to be strong for you. And all of that really started a journey where I just got better at understanding and putting language to the emotions that were in me. I just didn't have really much understanding of how to navigate my emotions, how to navigate grief and trauma and support and what I really needed through such a hard process.
Are there any practical things that you did or I did in our relationship together that did a great job of giving a space for each of us to grieve in the way that we needed to? I know a lot of our listeners are very practical people, and you're that way too. So I would love if you could share with us if you have any practical things that maybe you did in our relationship that gave both you space and me space to grieve.
I think starting with asking each other what we needed, sometimes that's a really hard question, especially when you're in just the survival mode. You just want to go to sleep. You just want to get through the day, you know, all of that. So answering the question, what do you need on like some emotional level can be a challenging question. But I think over time, we were able to kind of clue each other in more overtly on things like that. And I mean, we did practical things like introvert nights where it's like, hey, when we get off work, like we don't have to watch a show together. We don't have to talk about any of this. We can set aside this space. Like you go do something that is nourishing and fun to you, and I will go do something that's nourishing and fun to me. And then we'll come back together at the end of the night. But really giving each other that space to be individuals was really helpful.
I would agree with that. I think we started introvert night after we were a little bit going head to head, a battle of bedtime. I wanted to stay up late and talk and process or watch a show on Netflix. And you were tired and wanted to go to bed early. So inevitably, we would try to meet somewhere in the middle. And I would feel frustrated because I wasn't really ready to go to bed yet. And then you would feel frustrated because you had already stayed up an hour past the time that you wanted to go to bed. And so I think we realized at some point that, you know what, like, let's just set aside one night a week. If I want to stay up late, I can.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to go to bed, you can.
Definitely. And I think maybe other practical things were along the lines of just being a better student of each other, where you start to recognize what some triggering situations can be. And I think we somewhat expected certain triggers to show up in certain situations. And that really gave a more safe place for each of us to deal with what we were going through and to feel validated and cared for in the specifics of what that really looked like.
One thing for me that I feel that I was able to do, I think I came to realize that you didn't really have a lot of space to grieve because I was relying on you and leaning on you as my primary support.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I did was to go and seek individual therapy and also to find a couple of trusted people in my life that I could share some of that with, that it didn't all have to be with you, even though you were my partner, my husband, obviously my number one support. But I think sometimes that may have put a little bit too much pressure on you to be that sole support system for me. And I feel that I noticed a difference in your ability to grieve and process when I started having other avenues. I had no idea that fertility coaches or bereavement doulas were a thing. I had not heard of that. That would have been something I would have absolutely benefited from.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I was able to find additional resources of support that weren't just you. And I feel like that gave you a little bit of time and space to breathe and heal and process and grieve yourself.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, it goes back to the whole cultural pressure of being strong for her kind of thing. And during those times that I felt like I was, you know, a primary support for you, it really didn't feel like I had the freedom to not be okay. So I think that was a huge, extremely helpful and practical way that I was able to heal and that we were able to have a better dynamic, I think, in our relationship.
Yeah. And you found that support for yourself, too. It kind of went both ways.
Absolutely.
It is hard for men to connect with other men on deep, hard issues and conversations.
Yep, it's definitely more uncommon.
But you were able to push through that and find some men in your life to really process and share with what you were feeling.
Yeah, and that was huge because it makes you feel not alone. And when you don't feel alone, I think that leads to a lot more hope. In even if it's not that hope that the circumstance is going to change, it definitely increased my hope that we're going to be okay. No matter what, we're going to keep showing up for each other. We're going to keep showing up for ourselves, and we're going to be okay.
I want to talk a little bit about pregnancy after loss. This is something that's really hard for anyone who's experienced a loss. How would you say that we navigated that decision to try again to get pregnant? We did it 8 times.
Yeah. And I think it changed over time as things got a little more complicated. You know, at first we knew we wanted kids, so we just kept trying. And as we had more than 2 losses, we added, you know, various medications and treatments and went through testing and things like that. And it was all naturally conceiving. Things really changed when IVF got on the table, you know, financially, logistically, just the implications of it with timing and all of it is just huge. And I think as we got into that kind of area of decisions of, you know, really what direction are we going to go here? I think we got pros and cons lists together of like looking at each options that we had out there, you know, and that was definitely a smaller list of options after ectopic pregnancies. But, you know, I think we just continued to ask each other, you know, where we were at. And that can be hard because sometimes, you know, I was kind of ready to take a step, but you weren't, and vice versa. And that can be tricky, but to kind of keep that communication open, I think was important. After a lot of the options were off the table, it's like, okay, do we still want kids even? And as the answer continued to be yes, we kind of asked, okay, well, what's financially possible? And let's see if we can take a step and let's see what we have peace about.
Well, we all know that hindsight is 20/20. We obviously have so much more perspective today that we didn't have when we were first beginning our journey. David, if you could go back and give yourself some advice for how to cope with the hard elements of this journey in a healthy way, what would you tell yourself?
I'd say expectations of yourself, of your partner, of each of the steps in the journey isn't really helpful. I think I just had so many expectations of how I should be able to handle this, how I should behave, how Lindsay should be, how each of these tests should come out. There was just a lot of expectations that honestly just made the grief and the things that didn't meet the expectations just all the more painful. I think I would have told myself to just be more present with how things are, like really are. Feel the things you feel. Sit in the unknown with each other. Don't deny hardship. But I mean, keep hope still, because you really don't know what this is all going to look like. But if you do actually learn how to grieve and how to take care of yourself and push to keep growing in your vulnerability and your marriage, you'll be okay.
I love that. I love what you said about taking the expectations off, and also what you said about not shoulding on ourselves or each other.
Yep.
That was something my therapist told me, and it has really stuck with me, that we don't need to should on ourselves or should on other people.
Yeah, it just feels like tons of shame whenever you don't meet your own expectations. And it is just a recipe for bitterness and never really being happy with the relationships you have if you have a bunch of expectations on them as well. So absolutely, I still do it sometimes, but I am trying to not shoot on myself as much as I did in those early days.
It's about progress, not perfection.
Not perfection.
You mentioned earlier that you had to go through a process of learning how to grieve. What can you share about what that process looked like for others listening, maybe specifically men who are experiencing infertility or loss?
I think it's important to know that just because she's grieving doesn't mean you can't grieve. And like I said, being strong for her sometimes just comes across as not being vulnerable. And that can make her feel so alone. I know we had you know, many conversations over the years that really came back to, I was kind of being a robot. And the last thing that you needed when you're going through an incredibly painful, heart-wrenching experience is to have the person that you've decided to spend the rest of your life with be almost cold and unfeeling. And if you don't allow yourself to feel, you're not going to heal internally for yourself. And it's going to be a huge obstacle to your partner as well, who is just going to feel alone. And I just know from what you have told me that that's just so isolating and really discouraging.
That's really helpful. Do you have any encouragement or advice for people listening about how they could best support their husband or partner in his grief of infertility or loss?
I think let him not be okay. Like you said, when you were able to get friends and a therapist and resources in your life to make it to where I didn't feel the pressure that I was somehow an anchor in your life in a really existential way, that really gave me the freedom to kind of go through what I needed to go through and to be able to feel things. So let him not be okay. And if you tell him it's okay to not be okay, mean it. Because I think it would probably take just one time of saying, hey, tell me what you're really feeling. And then if your partner shares what they're really feeling and that feels like a threat or it feels neglectful of what you're going through and, you know, you react in a way that betrays that kind of trust, that can really shut down that line of communication and really probably delay the healing that needs to happen.
And I think I've messed that up before in our relationship. And that's something that we've had to work through. So if you're listening and you messed that up, I think apologize.
Absolutely.
Own it and just try to create a safe space for him to process what he's feeling.
And I will say that I have done that to you quite a bit as well, where I would say like, hey, tell me what you're really feeling. And then you would externally process and that whole, it would feel like a threat to my ability to keep peace. And I would respond in a way that made you feel, oh, he didn't really want to hear the full extent of what I'm going through. And that just served to create more isolation. So let your partner not be okay, but don't tell them it's okay to not be okay unless you mean it.
I'm curious if you have any advice for friends and family or for loved ones of a couple that's going through infertility or loss. Is there a way that friends and family could love and support both partners who are going through this grief together?
I think no matter what the specifics of the situation are, text him too. Let him know that it's okay and allowed and expected to grieve and give that license to truly feel whatever he's feeling. Pay attention to Father's Day and be overt about it. And I think as much as you can, try to be a safe place for him to explore vulnerability. And don't just ask how his partner's doing, but to really ask how he's doing as well. And then, of course, there's practical things like take him out to dinner or golf or some activities or event and overtly say that you're doing it because you want to support him during this time. I think we can sometimes shy away from being that straightforward because, oh, we don't want to make it awkward or anything. He's going through it, and even if he feels a little bit uncomfortable with stepping into vulnerability in that moment, the support that you're showing really, really goes a long way. And I'll just say, when you have conversations and you're asking how things are going, pressing beyond the, oh, it's hard, but we're getting through it, really shows a deep level of care. I know I had a good friend of mine who simply asked me the question, tell me something about what you're experiencing that no one knows and that you don't feel that you've been able to volunteer to anyone because it's just too much. And I was able to share some of the gruesome specifics of how miscarriage happens and the experiences that we had together throughout each of those losses. And he was absolutely blown away that he had never thought about that before. And that was just so validating and went such a long way towards me feeling that I could be vulnerable with others.
David, this has all been really helpful. It's fun doing this with you. These are conversations that we've had, gosh, a lot of over these 9 years of our marriage. And I'm grateful that we do have this perspective now that we can share with others who are listening, who are coming behind us in this journey, that they may be just starting their journey with infertility or may have just experienced their first miscarriage. And I just wanted to give you the opportunity to share one final word of hope and encouragement.
There's no doubt that this is a hard road. I don't know what this journey is going to look like for you. I don't know what the steps are going to be, but I do know that if you take the time to learn about yourself, about your partner, and really embrace that vulnerability and allow yourself to feel what you're feeling, then you're going to be okay. It's not going to be easy. Your pain and your situation are unique, but you're not alone in what you're feeling.
Thank you so much for joining us today. If this is your first time listening and you're new to Catalyst for Courage, I would love to invite you to connect with us over on Instagram at Catalyst for Courage and to sign up for our newsletter at catalystforcourage.com. In both of these spaces, we share even more courage and hope, as well as helpful information, tools, and resources to support you wherever you are on your journey. If you loved this episode, please let us know by leaving a review, and don't forget to click subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Until next time, friend.